Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this therapeutic Davenport of love. As if my Gopher Illustrated members and the lovely people of the Twitter machine have anything to resonate with our listeners, this is going to be a very therapeutic episode.
Ryan, I have to ask you, because I intentionally avoid Gopher Illustrated on losses, because it's a tad bit emotional for me. As you know, I'm not a terribly emotional human. Sure. But man, I gotta imagine there is all manner of emotions flying on that message board.
There's a lot of takes going on. I will say this. The GI members, I salute you. You've gotten a lot better over the years, certainly since I first started becoming a part of the staff 12 years ago to now where I am as publisher. They're a lot more thoughtful, I would say. There's still emotion because you all care about Gopher football. It's why you're listening to this podcast. But I can understand why you're emotional after a game like that where Minnesota loses 31-13. The score would indicate that it was a three-score loss, which technically it was. But as Luke and I will get into tonight, that game is one that is now over 24 hours away. I've rewatched it. Luke's rewatched it. And to me, Luke, it's just going to be, for me, I remember it as the game of missed opportunities, the game of self-inflicted wounds for no reason, the game of uncharacteristic things we haven't seen in some time. I mean, you can go back to Penn State last year. But even then, I just don't feel like North Carolina – and if we somehow have any Tar Heel fans listening, I don't know why you're here, but I say this with the utmost peace and love. Drake May is really good, and I don't know that there's much else to say about the rest of your football team. Nate McCollum is good. He's not Drake May good. But this is a game, Luke, that is just going to be one that resonates with me for a while just because of how many opportunities Minnesota had, how many opportunities they had until – late in the third quarter to make this thing a game. And the name of the game, they couldn't execute at all to save their life, Lucas.
Yeah, it was really tough. Again, the Gophers lost 31-13. In general, you're right, Ryan. This is just a game of missed opportunities. We knew that this year in part was going to be, I would not call it a rebuilding process, right? But you had so much production leave that there was a lot of unproven. There's just a lot of unprovenness. And the reality is in this kind of situation, they just have not found a way to execute when needed most. You know, on the game, Ryan, again, the Gophers lost 31-13, but you know, you got to give North Carolina credit. You know, they amassed, you know, 414 yards through the air, 519 yards of total offense, right? They were really good in the passing game. But Ryan, we talked a ton about how they had just dominated people on the run. And, you know, if you erase the fourth quarter, and I know you can't, but they only gave up 100 yards rushing, right? Like on 37 attempts.
They shut down the reigning Doak Walker running back of the week and Omarion Hampton plus his compadre there, British Brooks. They allowed opposing North Carolina tailbacks to run. They had 24 carries, the North Carolina's tailbacks did.
Yes.
And if my University of Minnesota math is correct, they had 24 carries for somewhere around, 71 yards. Yeah, I think you're going to take that. And the issue is the running backs only got 71 yards, but Drake May accounted for about the other 440.
Yeah, so let's take the defensive side of the ball to start, right? Drake May, I think we could say he is everything that was advertised. You know, he was 29 of 40 for 414 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. The one interception was just horrendous, right? And the other one was an incredible play by Jack Henderson. We can probably get into those later. I think the thing that was most impressive for me in this game from him was, I've seen him play a couple times just on the move, how good he is, but also the athleticism is just so underrated. And I know you brought the stat of how many times, you know, he had converted third downs with his feet, but when you're that big and and you are able to run. And then number two, you are really efficient throwing the ball. Like when it is there, he almost doesn't miss, right? Like unbelievable. He is by far the best quarterback they've faced since CJ Stroud. And you know, the Gophers in some ways made CJ Stroud in his first start look like the freshman he was, but he was also surrounded by an incredible amount of talent, way more than what Drake May has, right? I was really impressed with him, and that is really probably the difference in this game.
One quarterback made the throws, one quarterback didn't. If you want to get as simple as you can possibly get from this game, one quarterback made the throws and gave his playmakers a chance to make a play on the ball. The other one didn't. And that's how one scores 34 points. That's how one generates four explosive plays of 38 yards or more. That's how on the flip side, Minnesota is still looking for their first 30-yard-plus explosive play and through a quarter of the season, which big issue, and we'll get to on that side of the ball. But it also doesn't help when you gift Drake May opportunities, which bugged me, certainly, watching it live in Chapel Hill, mm-hmm. watching on the rewatch, and that's kind of where I want to start, is the most glaring issue from that game, or the most glaring play, because I know folks are very emotional about the redshirt freshman safety, Aiden Goosby. We'll get into him a little bit later, and I will try and plead to you, your negative thoughts are being placed, I think, a little bit too harshly on him. But the play that is going to bug me, and I'm sure it's going to bug defensive coordinator Joe Rossi for a very long time, is that second explosive play where Minnesota forces a third down, but then makes the decision to try and do mass hockey line type of substitutions on a live ball.
Can I interrupt you right here, though? I haven't watched enough North Carolina. Do they intentionally try and not substitute, or do you think this? Okay, and they do, but they do it all the time, right?
Correct. This isn't a new thing, which is why it also bugged the heck out of me. Is this isn't new? North Carolina is a team that has played with tempo for quite some time. I think they're top 30 in plays per minute through the first two games of the season. This isn't some sort of new thing that sprung up, and you saw it. I believe this was the third drive of the game. Minnesota saw tempo, and even on that first series for North Carolina, there were plays where they didn't substitute. And here's and why that's important is this. If the offense substitute, the referee, the center judge, will stand over the ball, and he will look at the defensive sideline and give them ample time to substitute back to counter whatever the offense did. Well, Minnesota gets Drake May to the ground on second down.
Mm-hmm.
Force a third down. North Carolina doesn't substitute. Minnesota does. And so I got it on the GIF Rewind on Gopher Illustrated, which if you're not a member already, I don't know what I have to do to plead to you to become a member. But this is one of the perks, is I've got a screenshot and the GIF of this play. As Drake May snaps the ball, I'm staring at the still shot of this. Every Gopher player on defense is staring at the sideline. They don't have a call. Everybody's trying to blame this on Aiden Goosby. He doesn't know what the call is because there is no call. They all improvised in the secondary, and it results in a 55-yard play. If you want to be mad at somebody about that, look at the head coach who's standing at the 45-yard line not calling a timeout.
Mm-hmm. We have to keep in mind, too, that this is the head coach that seemingly takes some very head-scratching timeouts because he doesn't see something he sees something that he doesn't like, right? So, yes, absolutely, this falls squarely on the shoulders of PJ.
100%. And that's where first half timeouts for him, we've seen for now 7 years. He'll take them if the wind is blowing the wrong direction in front of a play at times. He has said he's very liberal with his timeout usage in the first half. And that's why this play arguably is the most shocking to me of the entire game, because how does Fleck not see that? Well, I'm glad you asked, because we asked him in a very irritated PJ Fleck answered that question after the game, is why didn't you call a timeout? He thought the center judge was there. He didn't know that. That's inexcusable. That's on him. He took the blame for it. Great. He took the blame for it. Well, the issue is you had him on 3rd and 5, and instead they get him all the way down to the 1 and score on the next play. The other thing I don't understand, if you want to switch the blame off the head coach, And it's a question I'm going to ask Joe Rossi on Wednesday is, what did you see on tape that led you to believe that a team that has played with tempo in the past, a team that had played with tempo through the first two drives of the game at times, that you could do mass hockey line substitutions? I'm not talking about they were rotating in two or three players. They rotated in at least five players in their front seven, brand new. Five off, five on. If it wasn't five, it was six. They didn't have the call. There was no substitution. Why are you substituting against Drake May on third down at home? And that's what happens is you give up that explosive play. It's to me, of all the things on defense that went wrong, that play specifically is the one that bugs me, because how long have we talked about on this podcast how the details of a Joe Rossi defense have always been outstanding?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this outlier play that happens to be in a very pivotal spot early in this game against a very good opponent. And now you're down 14 rip and you already have a struggling offense. And that's why it bugs me as much as it does, is it's Joe Rossi, Mr. Detail. I don't have an answer for you. I will by the time we record the Northwestern preview episode of what in the world Joe Rossi was thinking there and mm-hmm. why Fleck didn't call a timeout. But that's the thing to me. Everybody wants to yell at the safeties. The safeties didn't have the call. That's inexcusable, number one. Fleck should have called the timeout, and I don't understand why they were doing these mass hockey line type of substitutions on a live play, Luke. I just don't understand it for the life of me.
I don't understand it either. In part, it almost felt like it was schemed. And this is where I don't have enough context around North Carolina.
Fine schemed.
Where it was almost like they were trying really hard to get Minnesota and catch Minnesota in these kinds of situations.
Well, I'm sure they saw after the first two yes. drives that Minnesota would at times do a couple of substitutions on a live ball, but not this mass on, mass off, which yeah. the only way this makes sense to me in Joe Rossi's mind is he thought that North Carolina had substituted. Subbed.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
somebody made a mistake, basically, right?
Somebody made a mistake, and that lies on the shoulders of the head coach and the defensive coordinator to me.
Yeah, yeah, no question. Otherwise, defensively, I think, I mean, we can't hide the fact that they were again able to force turnovers against one of the best quarterbacks in the country, right? I know you don't like to see the 31 points, but you again continue to see the maturation of this defense from the standpoint of they're able to continue to get pressure on a very mobile, very good quarterback. I got to look at how many sacks they had. But in general, they were very good again against. So let me see. So five TFLs, two
five
sacks.
Tackles for loss, two sacks on the day.
Yeah.
Drake May escaped a couple times.
Yeah. I mean, in general, there's things that continue to be encouraged again by. The issue ultimately, though, is the explosive plays, which this is not something that we're used to seeing, and that's why it's frustrating. I want to go to the first touchdown. I thought for a second there he was short. The double move on Aiden Goosby. On that double move, does Aiden Goosby bite? Absolutely. Does he recover very well? Yes, you have to admit he recovers very well. Was it an incredible throw? Yes, it was an incredible throw and catch. That's going to happen in football. I'll live with that, right? You are going to bite sometimes. He is a redshirt freshman. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan.
Yes, he's a redshirt freshman. This is his third game of extended action. I look at it. I'm staring at it now on the GIF rewind. I'm also staring at it on the still shot. If you go back and rewatch the GIF or even look at the still shot, Goosby recovers well enough to where his left arm is across the chest of the defender as the ball arrives. And it just happens to be the receiver made a great play. Goosby made a good play to recover. And Drake May gave his playmaker an opportunity to make a play on the football. It is what it is. That one truly doesn't bug me very much. It's a redshirt freshman. I thought he recovered very well on it, missed it on a double move. It is what it is. But the larger point I think you're going to here is, it's one I explored in my five takeaways that go live after every game on Gopher Illustrated, is four explosive plays for North Carolina's offense of 38 yards or more. Those happened on four different North Carolina drives.
Yep.
Do you know What happened as a result of four explosive plays on four different drives for North Carolina?
They scored, but did they score touchdowns on everyone? I don't think so.
They scored three touchdowns, one field goal.
And Ryan, that 24 just...
24 of their 31 points came as a result of an explosive play on a drive. It's going to be something you hear a lot tonight. Explosive plays matter. That's why they matter, because if you get one, it results in a touchdown like the Aiden Goosby slip up. And when you don't generate explosive plays, the margin for error becomes so much higher because you have to travel so many more yards down the field. And that's where on the other 73 offensive plays that North Carolina ran, they averaged under 5 yards a carry, or excuse me, 5 yards a carry, 5 yards a play. It was like 4.6 yards per play. Now, the other issue with that is, Luke, one of the best third down defenses. Well, before I get there, do you have any more thoughts on the explosive plays? Because again, Drake May made some plays, but explosive plays just ruined the day overall for this Gopher defense.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot more. But in general, your point about your ultimate success on a drive, or having a drive be successful and translating into points, almost always needs to include some sort of explosive play. It's very rare in college football, and I know that we've lived this for four plus years with Mo Ibrahim. Like, you're not going to sustain drives like that very often, so you need to have explosive plays. You know, on the day, North Carolina had six to Minnesota's three. Like, that's in part why they were able to score more touchdowns. And the reality is, in Minnesota's, like, they just didn't have any that, you know, ultimately added to their expected points added. It just didn't, right? And the majority of those were rushing. I think Brockington had one of 25 yards, Ryan. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Minnesota had a couple plays of 25 yards on the day, which technically is an explosive for them. They had a Darius Taylor run of 28 yards.
And then
yards,
Brockington had the 25-yard reception. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, but in general, you have to have those explosive plays. And the biggest thing for Minnesota offensively was they missed them, right? And for the most part, I don't think North Carolina missed one. And that is the challenge, because Joe Rossi's defense is predicated on not giving up explosive plays. And when they did, it put them in a pickle.
It's just something uncharacteristic. You knew North Carolina was going to be able to generate some. That's why they've scored 35 points on average over their last 16 games prior to this. But the way that they happen is what bugs me. You knew that they were going to generate some just by being good. That's where that first Aiden Goosby, you know, miss resulting in a touchdown, that's going to happen. It's that second one that can't happen, and the subsequent ones after that. But the other part about this game that bugged me defensively is, think about third down on Saturday afternoon, where both Minnesota and North Carolina, their average distance to go on third down was 6 yards. Minnesota had 12 third downs. North Carolina had 17. The difference, why third downs matter? North Carolina converted, I believe, 70-plus percent. 12 of their 17 third downs were converted against this Gopher defense. And on the flip side, Minnesota only converted 3 of their 12 third down. That's 25%. A lot of things to point to in this game, but for what was or had been recently one of the best third down defenses in the country, Minnesota couldn't find a way to get off the field. And why it bugs me as much as it does, because the average distance to go on those, 6 yards over the course of 17 different third downs. And Luke, missed rushing lanes, missed tackles, people not being able to set an edge, not being able to contain Drake May in the pocket, which I had talked about at length, as you know, on that preview episode. But Minnesota couldn't find a way to get off the field. And if you let Drake May run 77 plays against you, things aren't usually going to be going your way.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, there was issue with tackling, and that was frustrating. But yes, the biggest part, yes, they're able to force some pressure. You know, one of the sacks, Danny Strigow, was a shoestring tackle, right?
Did a great job of sweeping the ankle. Yep. It's something that Minnesota teaches their defense in terms of when you have a situation like that, as Danny did, and where the player is running away from you, you dive out and you try to grab and sweep the ankle to be able to trip them up. And he executed that beautifully.
Yeah. But, you know, in general, yes, they really struggled to keep him contained. When they did keep him contained, they put him in tough positions. I think about the interception, like the bad interception that went to Collins, if I remember correctly. You know, that was Ja Joyner getting pressure on him there. And then
he got caught on a chicken wing on the left tackle there.
Yeah.
He was able to generate that pressure, which you want to talk about. There's 10 important things to talk about in this game. And one of the top 10 is, I don't think people understand that if Chris Collins catches that ball and doesn't fall immediately to the ground, there is a very good chance that he's in a foot race with an offensive lineman. Or if he has blockers behind him, the only person who is going to catch him is a skill position player who he's got a 15-yard head start on. That could have been a game-changing type of play, let alone, you know how I like to take a stroll down Narrative Street.
Yes, I do.
It was the Chris Collins revenge game.
Yes.
And Chris Collins gets an interception thrown right to him because of a Ja Joyner pressure. If he just keeps his feet, I don't know how else to kind of say this because I don't really understand. I've watched this play several times. I don't know why. I don't know how he kind of just falls onto the ball unless he didn't think he secured it. That's the only thing I can think of.
Maybe he doesn't catch a lot of balls, Ryan. Like, that could be another thing.
I mean, he drops into coverage enough. He is a rush end. He's used to it. I mean, he's played enough football in his life. The man's 23 years old. He's in his sixth year of college football. But if he catches that, he's got three lead blockers. He's got Ja Joyner on top of Drake May. He's not getting caught unless somebody gets him from behind. And instead of 14-3 with Minnesota getting the ball at their own 28, 14-10 sounds a little bit nicer to me. That play bugs me. I'm just saying, if Chris Collins keeps his feet there with a gift thrown directly to him because Ja Joyner affects the play, this game might also look – but again, self-inflicted wounds to an aspect. Keep your feet, young man. Catch it clean.
Yeah, the other thing that we do need to talk about was the phenomenal interception by Jack Henderson and just the performance from Jack Henderson in general. I think in large part this was his coming out party. Outside of some cramping, he did have moments where he flashed Ryan and looked phenomenal.
That was his best game as a Gopher, without question. That's you know, you're happy for him as well, being a FCS transfer coming up to the Big Ten level, wanting to prove himself. He's able to drive into the flat there as he's trying. Drake May is trying to hit the second level throw. Jack Henderson is rolling right, finding the soft spot in between the sight line of the first option and the second option. Drake May doesn't put enough loft on the ball. Jack Henderson makes a great play, rolling to his left, goes up, grabs it, is able to get Minnesota's offense inside the red zone. But he was a sure tackler all day. I know Pro Football Focus loved him. He was the highest graded Gopher on the night with a 90-plus grade. I'll remind you, listeners who don't subscribe to GI, don't get the PFF reports, a 60 grade is dead average. So a 90 grade is truly elite. That's the word that they use, not just PJ Fleck vernacular. Yeah, number 20 for Minnesota played outstanding. I think PFF can tell you that. Luke can verify, and I can certainly verify. Whether it was in coverage, whether it was coming up and blowing up a couple of screens near the line of scrimmage they were trying to set up, they were very good. Jack Henderson deserves a lot of credit. He was a bright spot in what was a tough day for the Gopher defense.
All right, the other thing I want to highlight that I thought the Gophers did well but probably didn't merit quite enough was, holy cats, Ja Joyner gets held all the time. He garnered one flag, but the poor man, what does he have to do? Like, we've gone over this in the Wisconsin game. You know, he did earn one there, but man, that guy gets held constantly.
I don't know what he's got to do besides yell more while looking directly into the depths of the referee's soul behind the referee and make a lot of noise. Not incredibly sure, but I think another bright spot folks should take away from this game is, I know that I had questions coming into the year about how improved was Minnesota's defensive line. How improved were they? We saw glimpses of it in the first couple of games where Minnesota certainly looked like the better team up front. But I think you saw it again against what is a top 25 team. Now, we can get into a whole different discussion about who's a quote-unquote good college football team right now through the first 3 weeks of the season, as I think every – most teams in college football have had a clunker like Minnesota has had just this past Saturday. But I think Minnesota controlled them in the trenches. We talked about how they stopped the reigning Doak Walker running back of the week. And this was a North Carolina offense, folks. I talked about it in the preview. Had been incredibly efficient on the ground, had been explosive on the ground, and Minnesota just took away their running game completely. That's why Drake May on the day throws 40 times, and he had more dropbacks than that, probably around, let's say, 48 to 50 dropbacks, because they couldn't run the ball. Nobody had been able to stop North Carolina running the ball through the first 2 weeks of the season, including South Carolina. So I think the Gopher defensive line from Jalen Logan Redding, who I thought played really well, Kyler Ball, Logan Richter even being able to play a part there, among others up front. I think Minnesota's defensive line, if we're going to start to really drill down on takeaways that are going to translate both short-term against Northwestern and long-term outlook going for the rest of the Big Ten season, I think it's pretty clear to me that Minnesota's defensive line is as improved as I would have hoped. Mm-hmm. I talked about all offseason how the defensive line last year I thought was pretty mediocre, below average at times. I think this year they're certainly proving themselves to be above average. I don't want to say that they're good yet. I mean, I think they're certainly much improved, but that's where they're going to have much stauncher tests coming in October and November. Not sure that Northwestern is going to be quite the viable test here this upcoming weekend, but it is worth noting that the defensive line largely played a big part of that, being able to shut down what had been a very viable run game for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, again, the other thing that I do want to highlight is just linebacker play in general. Again, without Cody Lindenberg, you know, there's some inexperience here, definitely. Maverick Baranowski's in, what, game three of extended action? You know, Devin Williams had an absolute, you know, thump on Drake May. Great hit, but you know, they were good in the run game. What was your assessment, Ryan? I was not overly impressed.
I guess I'll start first with Cody Lindenberg and the news that he did not play. Obviously, he did work out before the game. I did see him talking with the trainers after I saw him work out live. I thought he looked pretty good, especially knowing that he's coming back from a soft tissue injury. I believe it's a hamstring that he pulled during fall camp. This isn't one of those where it was a light pull. He really pulled it. I mean, we're talking probably a grade two strain, I would say. You know, I don't pretend to be a medical doctor, but it's now been 4 weeks-ish since he pulled it, and he's getting closer. I thought my intel had been he was going to be a true game-time decision, which he was. Got upgraded on the availability report from out to questionable. He worked out before the game for the first time with the other linebackers. I truly thought he was going to play. The intel I had, he was going to play, but Minnesota really wants him to be 100%, and that's where the trainers held him out. That's where Minnesota's linebackers struggled at times. Maverick Baranowski, to me, is just playing like a young linebacker. I don't know how else to really put it in terms of inexperience, because he's what Joe Rossi wants in terms of he's in the right spot to make the play. It's just consistency in terms of actually making the play. He and Ryan Selig missed too many tackles for my liking.
Exactly.
Maverick missed three tackles according to Pro Football Focus. Ryan Selig missed three tackles according to Pro Football Focus. They were the two lowest graded tacklers on the entire defense. You had Maverick Baranowski take the cheese on a touchdown to the tight end where he reads the stock block from the tight end in the slot, thinking that there's going to be a bubble screen coming in behind it, and then the tight end releases. But by then, Maverick got caught cheating in the backfield. He took the cheese, got his eyes in the wrong spot, the tight end releases, and it's an easy touchdown. Things like that. That's what it just can't happen if you want to win football games like that. And that's where he's in the right spot to make the play, which is what you want. He's just not making the play consistently enough. I also don't pretend to be the biggest Ryan Selig fan from what I've seen through the first three games of the season. I don't know if it's him adjusting to the Big Ten speed of the game, just Power 5 speed of the game, going from playing Mike at Western Michigan the last 2 years, getting a lot of time at that spot, to now he's playing Sam linebacker in Minnesota's defense. Maybe he's struggling a little bit with – with that, but he's another one where he doesn't have the excuse that Baranowski does of being inexperienced. This is a guy that's played thousands of career snaps on defense, and he's taking poor angles to the ball. He's missing tackles. Minnesota needs to get Cody Lindenberg back sooner than later. Now, I don't know that they necessarily need Cody to push himself to get back for Northwestern. That's not a very good football team. Louisiana, certainly a very viable Sun Belt team, and we'll talk more about them next week. But I thought the linebackers left some to be desired. I think they flashed some good things, but it's just not enough consistency for me, Luke. They're in the right spot to make the right play, or at least they were against North Carolina specifically in this game. They just missed their opportunities, and that's part of why, how does Minnesota give up 12 third down conversions?
Yeah.
A linebacker doesn't take the correct angle to cutting off Drake May. A linebacker doesn't wrap up on third down. A linebacker gets caught taking the cheese, and that's how you get to where you be.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, the Gophers gave up 31 points on the day, the most they've given up in, gosh, Ryan, like, was this 8 or 9 games?
First time in the last, since Penn State last year, yeah, when Penn State put up 45 on Minnesota in the whiteout, Minnesota gives up over 20 points for the first time in the last 8 games when North Carolina scored 31 on Saturday. But that's the thing I want to talk about a little bit, Luke, is the streak got broken. Okay. You had to travel to Chapel Hill, take on a ranked North Carolina team. Okay. But to me, it felt different in terms of, you felt like against Penn State in a whiteout, you maybe didn't have the best shot in the world, considering what that atmosphere was like, well, how Penn State had been humming against teams in 2022, not named Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah.
North Carolina is good with Drake May because Drake May is fantastic. He's going to be a first-round draft pick in the next NFL draft. I don't have to be Mel Kiper to tell you that. But it was these missed opportunities. Minnesota, in terms of athletes on the field, you can't tell me that they were much different than what North Carolina had out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they have the same-ish caliber of athlete. You just didn't execute, which was the name of the game, too many self-inflicted wounds.
Ryan, it's pretty cool to see in some of these road games all the Gopher fans getting together, and I spotted a number of home field apparel shirts, and those absolutely stood out relative to the other Gopher maroon and gold items that people are wearing at their tailgates. Again, home field at homefieldapparel.com, just some elite gear for Gopher fans.
I saw a lot of these home field shirts on the plane, at the airport, at the game at Chapel Hill. It's clear that people have been listening here, and they've gone to homefieldapparel.com. They've clicked on the Minnesota school. They've scrolled through the sweatshirts, the sweatpants, the T-shirts, saw the unique designs, and said to themselves, I got to get me one of these. Because I heard, truly heard, someone compliment one person wearing one of these home field apparel saying, hey, where did you get that? So if you want to be cool like all these cool kids out here wearing the home field apparel, go to homefieldapparel.com. Click on the Minnesota or whatever school that you think has got some great merch. And at checkout, use the promo code GG23 for 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG, as in Gopher Gridiron, 23, the two numbers, at checkout to get 15% off your first order.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the offense, Ryan. I don't think this is going to be a short segment, I have to admit.
What gave that away?
There's a lot to get through here. Where to start feels a little challenging, but here's where I want to go. I want to talk about the objective facts in this game. The objective facts are they scored 13 points. That's just not enough, right? It's frankly just not enough. Ethan Kaliak-Manis was 11 of 29 for 133 yards. Not great. He threw another interception. Also not great. Cole Kramer came in, threw a really bad interception. Also things that are true. Darius Taylor is a dude. 22 carries, 138 yards, 6.3 yard average. Ethan had some very good moments on the ground. Turning those into extending plays, getting first downs, etc. there were moments in the passing game where, you know, the Darius Taylor 25-yard reception really early in the game, that was great. Sean Tyler getting involved in the pass game, that was good too. Lamecki Brockington had another 25-yarder. There were really good things. Then there were things, Ryan, like Daniel Jackson slipping, Brevin Spanford having a ball hit him in the hands and dropping it. There was Spencer had one hit that hit him Chris in the hands.
Bell finally plays a snap,
slips,
and he falls down.
Yeah,
it seemed like anything that could possibly go wrong for the Gopher passing game just went wrong.
Yeah, and we talk about this a lot, Ryan, especially in the Mitch Leidner era. We talked about, hey, to be successful passing the ball, a lot of things have to go well. One of those needs to be you need to pass protect, right? You need to get a good pre-snap and post-snap read. You need to execute and throw. You also need to get separation. It seemed like in this game, there were lots of opportunities that just didn't get executed, right? There was a guy either breaking open or was open, and the ball was ill-placed or it was dropped. Like, it was just a struggle. Nothing seemed fluid.
Nothing about that game offensively spoke to any one of you listeners and said, yeah, Minnesota's got this thing going in the right direction going into game four of the season, which is the large issue here, is the run game seems to have found a voice with an offensive line that I think is coming together. And we can talk about them rotating their guards essentially every series throughout the entire game, which certainly is a choice. But that would be the only bright spot, I would say, is Darius Taylor continues to exceed my expectations, I would say. Now, expectations for that young man were certainly lofty coming in. I've been talking about him now for years, considering he's been going back into the recruiting process when Minnesota got him committed to then he spurned Michigan State. I think by now you know the story. He's incredibly gifted. It's only his third year ever playing running back. In his second year, full-time playing running back. And you're able to see his burst, his patience. The young man's very talented. He's like a bowling ball out there on the field. That's why he was as efficient as he was. So I want to make sure that that doesn't get lost in the wash. Is I spent a lot of time in August saying, Sean Tyler and then what in the run game? Because that was what the Minnesota staff was asking themselves. That's what I was asking them. They didn't have an answer for me as well, is they needed to see someone step up when the lights came on. And luckily for Minnesota, I think now for hopefully years to come, they're going to be leaning on number one for 20-plus carries a game.
All right, yeah. I think the reality is yes, in game one against Nebraska, didn't have a running identity. Feels like we now have that identity. Great. We threw the ball a ton, 44 attempts against Nebraska, right? In this game, we at least stayed consistent trying to throw the ball. 30 attempts, but we only completed 11 of the 30. This was a game, Ryan, of just missed opportunities. There were ball, like Ethan just had, he just had a bad game. It just wasn't good. We've seen his really good, like you can go back and look at Wisconsin in 2022. I really hope that this is the floor, because without him being able to execute, this is going to be a very, very challenging season.
You took my take from the pre-production meeting, you son of a gun.
Yeah, I took it.
Yeah, okay, claiming it as your own. Yeah, certainly. I'll tell you, it was the talk of the airport this morning when I was standing there at the gate. And I'll tell you this much, Luke, there's a lot of people that came up to me while I was traveling here in the last 48 hours and said they love the podcast. And if you came up to me and said hello, awesome. I appreciate you guys listening. We really, really do. If you saw me and didn't say hi, come say hi to me next time. But to your point, Luke, about Ethan, I don't know how simply I can convey this to the listeners, but this is what I'll say. This offense is going to go as Ethan Kaliakmanis goes. And if you want to be optimistic, that's the worst game Ethan Kaliakmanis will ever play. he was just so out of sorts from the first drive to the last drive. There were drives, a couple, I would say. I mean, that one before halftime, he seemed to settle down a little bit and be able to make some throws consistently.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because he went into the two-minute drill. He didn't have time to think. He could just react.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, Ethan was not good. And that's where there's a lot of folks mad at Greg Harbaugh. And they're, trust me, I've seen your DMs of you just – I've seen your DMs, I've seen your tweets, I've seen everything on Gopher Illustrated. And here's what I want to ask you, Luke, before we kind of get into more of philosophical here. I think you're very justified, I would say, to be upset with Greg Harbaugh, but you're upset at him for the wrong reason. You're upset at him because I don't understand the play calling aspect, that some people think he's a terrible play caller. I don't see that. I see plays that are wide open and they're just not being executed. Where I would be upset is Greg Harbaugh, the quarterback coach right now, because Ethan Kaliakmanis, through the first three games of the season, is completing 51% of his passes. They're averaging under 150 passing yards a game, and he's got one passing touchdown to three picks, and two of those have been just deflected balls by Brevin Spanford, which is another topic we'll get to here in a little bit. But does that make sense? I understand that people are upset because the offense isn't efficient. It's not explosive. As someone who covers this football team, I'm upset because it's just inefficient football, which bugs the hell out of me. But that's where I want to try and drive this point home to the listener of I really don't think, and even Derek Burns, who's not with us here tonight, I'm not going to share everything from the group text, but I'll say this. Derek has no issue with the play calling, and Derek Burns is exponentially smarter than myself. And I'm not going to judge the IQ of the listener, but if Derek Burns also doesn't have a problem with it, I think the energy and the passion that you, the Gopher fan, have for wanting to see this offense succeed, it needs to be put towards why can Greg Harbaugh, the quarterback coach, not have this young man playing consistent, Luke?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the great mysteries at the moment. You know, Ethan was not exactly Mr. Consistent last season either, right? He had ups and downs, and we attributed it in large part to, you know, his lack of experience, right? Maybe that's not the case. I mean, time is only going to tell. I think if we can look at bright spots, Ryan, he was really good in the middle eight. If people aren't familiar with the middle eight, and this team was actually quite good in the middle eight. So this is the last 4 minutes in the first half and the first 4 minutes in the second half. The Gophers actually outscored North Carolina in the middle eight, 10-7. And I had another middle eight stat. I even had it pulled up. And I absolutely pushed it away, but they had 14 plays, to North Carolina's five. And most importantly, this was the only stretch probably of the entire game where Minnesota's expected points added was higher than North Carolina's. And it obviously was evident there as well. But Ethan didn't have an incompletion in that middle eight. And I thought you kind of alluded to this earlier. Ethan, I wonder if the pace of which they play is a deterrent for him, right?
Because it's so slow. Too much time to think about it between plays.
Well, I don't even know if it's so much the time to think, but it's just not a good pace for him, right? Because he has, when was he best against Nebraska? Probably the last 2 minutes, right? I know he missed a throw there, but like he wasn't exactly phenomenal. He had a couple of really good throws
that I hadn't thought of. That's for sure.
Yeah, but here in the last drive that resulted in the touchdown, they basically played more or less hurry up on their touchdown. In general, it just kind of hit me now as you kind of referenced it, Ryan. That was the best he played was in the middle eight. I don't recall if they tried to play fast in the early part of the second half, but they did run the ball successfully as well. But he didn't have an incompletion in the middle eight.
Well, there's that. But where I want to take this to continue to have it be productive is say that we can do some things hypothetically to fix Ethan. Now, again, he's still young. He's still learning. We are all saying that. But there's clearly some things that if he just fixes this, the offense gets better. And I think the first thing I would point to is the young man's got to learn some touch. Every ball, and this is how I wrote it in my takeaways after the game, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, Luke.
Yeah.
Every ball is like a max effort throw.
Yep.
And I compared it to, if you're a Minnesota Twins fan, every ball is a 102-mile-an-hour Johan Duran fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't need that much speed on a crosser, you know, these short to intermediate throws, say 10 yards and shorter from the line of scrimmage. And that's where you've seen some of these balls, like I think the one to Elijah Spencer and I think Brevin Spanford's. They should have been caught. I'm not telling you otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know about the Spanford one, but yeah.
Being at 102 miles an hour coming out the hand, he's got to learn the touch pass, a.k.a., again, if we're going to use horrible baseball analogies like I am, the Johan Santana changeup. You saw it from Drake May. You have to be able to change speeds with your ball coming out of the hand. Yeah, when you're pushing it from the near hash to the far boundary, yeah, you're going to have that little extra oomph on it to be able to make sure that the corner can't break on it and have it be a pick six. But if you're just throwing a short crosser here, the young man's got to learn some touch, Luke. I think that's pretty evident.
Have you noticed when you watch NFL games, they rarely throw anything a touch?
Say that again.
So if you watch NFL games, outside of a screen pass, right, where you're retreating, right, which would be the one, this Brevin Spanford one, effectively. I'm not sure that was actually a screen, but it was like a delayed play, like a wide delay of some kind, right?
We'll get to Brevin in that.
Yeah, but have you noticed if you watch NFL games, rarely do they throw anything but a fastball?
I would just say Ethan's arm, like I watched quite a bit. I watched a couple hours of NFL on my flight home today. And it just feels like the ball, again, I'm going to make this statement and people are going to take it the wrong way. So I'm trying to think how I can phrase it. But, you know, Ethan's ball comes out faster than some of these guys in terms of with more velocity than some of these guys in the NFL I watched today. And I'm not saying that it's because Ethan's arm strength is so great. I get that. But it's more so, like, watch, again, go back and watch the game and watch Drake May throw. Like, he's got enough arm strength to make anything in the world. But he also knows when you don't have to put 100% of everything you've got into every throw. You can dial it back to 80. You can dial it back to 70.
Sure.
I don't know that I would necessarily agree with. Again, when I say touch, I'm not saying he needs to float it out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying you don't have to throw a laser beam, and instead you can just throw the football.
Yeah, where I was going to go with that is when I watch, particularly the NFL, most of those are on a rope throws for the most part, right? And that's what Ethan exceeds at. But the big difference is that they throw catchable balls, right? That's what they're really good at. And I'm not saying that Ethan needs to be an NFL quarterback, but his problem is he does not always throw a very catchable ball.
Leads me to ball placement.
That's part of its ball placement and part of it is feel. And I know a lot of people want to say it's touch or, you know, whatever, but ultimately there's an element of feel and then there's also an element of placement. And you can still put a pretty good amount of mustard if you put it right on the money. And that's part of what's getting him into trouble is there's a lot of pace on it and it's not placed well.
Correct. And that's, I mean, that leads me into the other issue or the second issue I would say is the ball placement to his receivers has not been good. Where, to your point, if you're going to snap it in there, like, I'll take everyone back to the 2022 Wisconsin game. The game-changing, game-winning play to Lamecki Brockington is thrown on an absolute rope between the corner, the safety, and the linebacker. But the most important thing there is it's hit Lamecki Brockington in stride where he can turn and make a play. Now, Ethan has addressed this as recently as after the game, as recently as last Wednesday when we also talked with him. He knows ball placement is an issue. But the issue is Greg Harbaugh and his staff, they got to get him to be able to put it in a spot where the guys can take it and run, because he's just been errant. He's been erratic. Yeah. And that's where you think about that first drive of the game. I'm telling you, I'm staring at the GIF. If Ethan completes that pass to Brevin Spanford on that little wide delay,
oh, he's
coming out across the middle.
Yeah.
Luke, I'm telling you, I'm staring at where Brevin Spanford is as he leaps for the pass at the 22 because it's so thrown so far behind him.
Yes.
If he catches that on his, in front of him on his left shoulder, that's a touchdown. And if it's not a touchdown, he's down at the 5-yard line.
He, on that play, it was impressive that he batted it twice, like that he actually got a hand on it. That to me was impressive because that was.
If he doesn't, I mean, that's going to hit. I'm staring at it. It's going to hit the Tar Heel guy in the helmet. But
yeah, but then the guy, I mean, the guy's not going to catch it because he's not going to see it. But yes,
it's that's the thing though. That's a pass that is 10 yards.
Yes,
and Ethan has to be. If you can't complete that throw, and I understand there was pressure in his face, but you got to make that throw.
Yeah,
you got to make it. You have to put it in a spot where Spanford can catch it and run.
Yeah,
and that's where it's been unfortunate for Brevin that, number one, he hasn't played well, but it's been, I would say, put on display more because he's had two balls thrown behind him that he's trying to make a play on, and he's tapped it a couple times, and it's turned into interceptions.
Well, and he on one yesterday was effectively playing defense, right? I mean, he was going up for it, but it was in traffic, and that's the kind of 50-50 ball that more likely than not is going to end up on the ground, right?
But before we kind of table it to the Brevin discussion, I do want to say the last thing, and to me, the thing that has me the most perplexed, I would say, is his deep ball accuracy.
Yeah, do you think that was cramping? Because that one to Lemecki Brockington needs to be. You need to hit that.
He truly left the game after that play.
Yeah,
because he was cramping. But I think about what Fleck calls a cross country route to Corey Crooms in the first quarter. That Corey's open.
Yes,
he's hitting stride. It's a touchdown, and if it's not a touchdown, it's first and goal. You got to be able to hit that when you have a clean You have a clean pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You have all the ample time in the world to step into that throw. It's a throw you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
Or even the one that's even more glaring to me, the offensive drive of the day that just makes me very upset to watch is that one in the third quarter where it's 21-13. And to your point, it's that Lemecki Brockington throw.
Mm-hmm.
It's first down. Harbo dials up a shot. Lemecki Brockington.
I love that. I love that play call, by the way.
Remember, Greg Harbo's play calling.
I know, but I love that play call.
We can get into it in the red zone because I still think red zone play calling is an issue because they have no idea what they want to be there yet.
Yeah,
it's very strange. But Lemecki Brockington's wide open, and Ethan misses him in a spot where his receiver can't make the play. Remember how we talked about a half hour ago, Drake May puts the ball in a spot where his playmakers at least have a chance to make a play.
Yeah.
Ethan's not giving his guys a chance to make a play. And that's the issue here.
Exactly.
If his deep ball is bad, which that's why I say it's among the most perplexing of his issues, is it's clear that when the media has been at practice, I will say in the spring, in the fall, Ethan was hitting on these throws with, I would say, 60-70% completion. Mm-hmm. And that's going against the Minnesota secondary, I think, is pretty good. And no, you smart Alec who's ever thinking it, Aiden Goosby was not in coverage. Stop it. I don't know if he's got the yips with the deep ball, but the thing to me is the Corey Crooms throw and Lemecki Brockington throw specifically. You've got ample time. You've got all the time in the world to set your feet, get your mechanics right. You just got to make an accurate enough throw to where your guy can go make a play on the football. And if an offense like Minnesota's is constructed is going to continue to take deep shots, they have to be able to at least put the ball in a spot where the receiver can make a play, Luke.
Yeah, and as you say that, we have to probably acknowledge the interception by Cole Kramer as well, because that looked like you probably had a much better vantage point than anybody there. That looked like that was just a bad throw. Like it looked like Daniel Jackson was open.
Cooked the slot corner.
Yeah.
Like he was Carolina barbecue. I mean, he had him dead to rights on a post. And if you know anything about football, and even if you don't, I'll make it very plain for you. Daniel Jackson is lined up, I believe, in the slot. He's running a post, which means he's running 10, 12, 15 yards and breaking in at a 45-degree angle towards the center of the field, center of the end zone. And he doesn't have anyone in the same stratosphere. If Cole Kramer throws it like a post, where you throw it to the center of the field. Now, does it help that the offensive line gets a guy in his face? No, it doesn't. I'm not here to tell you otherwise. But Cole Kramer is a sixth-year quarterback. I understand it's his first pass attempt for many people in a live game in years. Well, that's a true statement. But the development that I'd seen in practice from Cole Kramer, he doesn't get to hide behind that. He has to be able to throw that ball to the hash. Throw it straight. If he just throws it straight from where he is, straight down the field, Daniel Jackson walks in for a touchdown. He's not going to have a corner within 5 yards of him. The safety wouldn't be there like he was to fair catch the football almost in the end zone. And if that is an accurate throw, we're talking it's 21-20 North Carolina with 2 minutes left in the third quarter, and we got ourselves a ball game.
Yeah.
But instead, the throw is incredibly errant. It's a arm punt into the end zone that the North Carolina safety fair catches almost. That's what we keep talking about, though. Self-inflicted wounds.
But that's another one.
You have opportunities to go make plays.
Yeah.
And you're not, the players aren't making plays.
Yeah.
And that ultimately comes down to coaching. It ultimately comes down to, if your playmakers just aren't going to make plays, then boy, it's going to be a tough day at the office like it was on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. And the reality too, Ryan, is that a lot of people didn't like that play call. They wanted to continue to see them run the football. I loved that play call. Like, I get the like Cole Kramer thing, but you gotta be willing to take and try and manufacture big plays. And I thought that was a very advantageous point to try that. I just liked the blend of play calling. I get a number of people didn't. I just thought the blend was good. They just didn't execute.
I know that there's a lot of people calling for Harbaugh's head as the play caller. I will say again, I understand if you're a little bit upset, but that's where I stop and say, okay, if you're more upset than that about the play calling, I just don't understand it, because it's the execution that's the issue.
Yeah.
I have no issue with that shot. Again, if you want to talk red zone issues, we can certainly do that, because Minnesota gets the ball once again, first and effing five. And they can't find a way to figure out what they want to be. And it is mind boggling.
All right. Before we get to that, we got to get to another break. And then we'll get into this. We got a number of different topics on the list here, but let's get to a break. Ryan, I know you took a flight and you flew to North Carolina. I got to imagine that you had those Beats Pros with you. I travel with two pairs of headphones. I always have my AirPods with me. I've absolutely loved my Comply foam ear tips. Probably the best thing, Ryan, for me was I was able to get kind of a starter kit. And with that kit, I got three different sizes. I got the perfect size for my ears. And now I have those on my AirPods at all times. I absolutely love the improved noise isolation. And most importantly, just the comfort that the Comply foam ear tips give me.
Yeah, they were game changing for my travel this week. And that was the first trip I believe I've taken extended, especially in an airport situation, where I'm able to just put in my Beat Pro AirPods, and my ears didn't hurt after I had them in for 2 hours on a flight. They were able to stay in the whole time. Noise isolation. If you took a flight this week and you were out in North Carolina, wherever it may have been, and you took out your earbuds and you thought to yourself, those silicone tips are causing my ears pain. I'm constantly adjusting them. I'm so tired of that. They're falling out. Go to complyfoam.com right now. They're a local company in Oakdale, Minnesota. Get yourself some of these memory foam ear tips today. Stop dealing with the pain. Stop adjusting constantly. Local company, again, complyfoam.com. They have all the brands you could possibly imagine, and use promo code GG23 at checkout. Get 20% off your order. Stop the hurt. You've made an investment in your AirPods, your earbuds, whatever they may be. Now protect your ears and make it a more comfortable experience for you with Comply Foam and complyfoam.com.
All right, we have a few more topics to get to. Some of these offensive focus, some of them, like, I didn't expect to talk about this, but athletic training focused. We'll get to that.
When everything goes pear-shaped like it did.
It's like everything that could go wrong did go wrong, right? Like everything. So let's talk the cramping thing first. Like, first, this isn't like an isolated thing that it's one person. This is like numerous guys. Justin Wally missed an extended period of time.
To start the
he's now
half.
Cramped
can't
twice
come out
this
and
season
play because he's cramping.
This is the happen? Second game though, Ryan, and you were there. It wasn't like wicked hot. I mean, I was looking at the temperature.
It was hot. It wasn't. I said this with Justin Gard on Gopher Football Sundays. It was hot, but I have a hard time believing it was any hotter than what opening night was.
But like, okay,
it was 90 degrees out that day. Now, obviously, it's hotter down on the field, but this is an issue. And Fleck was absolutely irked, is the best way I can describe it. Afterwards, he wanted to say some things about, I believe, the preparation that his team had for that type of setting where Ethan Calliope-Manis can't leave the game on a key spot in the game because he's cramping. Justin Wally can't miss I think he missed at least a drive to start the second half because he's cramping out of halftime. Jack Henderson cramps in his hamstring. It's inexcusable to me, or even to me also, Luke, as much as it is cramping, the amount of times that Gopher players were slipping and falling in this game compared to North Carolina. Yeah. What I don't know what else to kind of add to that other than if we're irked, I wish I could express to you or describe to you the look on the head coach's face when he was talking about it. I think he's going to certainly roll some heads and have some thoughtful, strong conversations with some people behind the scenes because stuff like that, it just can't happen, Luke. It just can't.
And then one thing that we don't get to see necessarily from TV, there looked to be a shady side of the stadium and a sunny side. Were the Gophers on the sunny side?
And the Gophers were on the sunny side of the stadium.
That makes sense. And then the other thing that I wanted to clear up too was I didn't notice North Carolina cramping ever. Was that the case? Or
I didn't. Maybe one player, if any. I don't remember them cramping, though, but I know that they were down a couple of times. Maybe it was just bumps and bruises that kept them down. But the clear difference in, I guess, cleat length, I don't know how else to describe that.
Yeah.
Or the cramping issues are just...
The Daniel Jackson slip was like, he had him cooked, right? And then he slips, and then I think the throw probably would have been there too if he doesn't slip. It's hard.
You're talking about the Ottman Bell third down throw.
No, hey, the one at the end zone.
Four snaps on the day. How about that? Yeah,
that was good. No, that was good. No, towards the end zone, they were in the red zone, and Daniel Jackson fell.
Is that the play where he was absolutely depleted, obliterated?
No, he wasn't hit. He literally just fell. I gotta look it up again. I'll try and find it on YouTube TV here while I while we're chatting.
But irregardless,
he was running like I forget the number, but you're faking kind of a slant and then you're jutting out, right? And Ethan threw hit his direction. He just fell.
I mean, the point being here is if we're talking about it, that's the issue. It's like long snapping. I should never be talking about the long snapper on a podcast. Peace and love to Brady Weeks and that family. If they're listening to this podcast, your son's done an exceptional job now for 4 years. I'm sorry we don't talk about it more. But if we're it's like long snapping, Luke. If we're talking about you, the training staff and the equipment people, I feel for you.
Yeah.
But it's an issue that it's a dumb issue. It's something that shouldn't be thought of or discussed like it has been at length now. But
yeah, it was third and goal, the 9:50 mark of the second quarter. Calliope-Manis, and they kicked the field goal, Dragan Kesich after that. But I digress. Okay, so that was something I never thought that we'd end up talking about, but it's
and
now...
I hope we never do again, and I hope it's addressed this week and going into Northwestern next weekend.
Was this three
under
straight...
the lights at Ryan Field, baby?
Wasn't this three games in a row, though, with cramping? Because there's definitely the Nebraska
it's
game.
It's been an issue each game this season. Yeah. It was just exemplified.
Do these guys not eat bananas?
I think all things are going to be on the table here over the course of the next 6 days between today and game day in terms of how does Minnesota keep their players in a spot where they're not dealing with the issues that they are.
All right. The other thing that I absolutely want to get to because it's basically – it's bugged me for a while now is Brevin has not played particularly well. And it took me until this game, I think, to realize he's not been as good as he's been historically, right? Now, I wanna acknowledge something first. Brevin's really good. He's a really good pass blocker, or he's a really good run blocker. He's improved drastically in that area. He's not the fastest twitch tight end that you'll see. He's not a Sam Laporta in terms of like speed. In Twitch, the thing that's bugging me right now, and it took this game, I'm not loving splitting him out, Ryan. I'm just not. I want them to take advantage of him as a tight end more than splitting him out as a receiver and running, you know, slot routes. Like that's not really his game, and maybe I'm taking that too far, but right now he's not performing, and I guess I'm looking for a reason why he's not performing.
So do you want to guess what percentage of snaps he has been either out wide or flexed out into the slot?
I bet it's
so far this season through three games, according to Pro Football Focus data.
I'd go 35% to 40%.
Correct. He's been out there about 35%.
Yeah.
And so he's been in line as a traditional Y tight end still 70-ish% of the time. Somewhere around there. But I think this almost goes hand in hand with the passing game issues is I could make the argument that your most, I would say, gifted pass catcher or the mismatch that they're just not mismatching is Brevin Spanford. Now, I'll tell you this much, Luke. The popular thing to do right now is try and dunk on me because now everybody's trying to take a victory lap that says Brevin Spanford isn't any good.
Okay. So I'm not saying he's not any good.
I'm not saying that that's what you're saying either.
Yeah.
But it's clear that, and Brevin was in the concussion protocol all week, I believe, and he was clear before the game, which is good. And I'm not making excuses for him. But this goes hand in hand to me with the passing game getting on track or at least taking a step forward over the course of the next 2 weeks is you have to figure out what you're doing with arguably your biggest mismatch here. You do continue to flex him out wide, especially in the red zone, and then not use him, which I feel like it's 2014 and we're talking about why don't the Gophers throw to Nate Wozniak, the 6'9" converted Saints offensive tackle in the NFL. Why does a Minnesota throw to Brevin Spanford in the red zone when they're struggling in the red zone? I don't have an answer for you in terms of how do they fix Brevin? Because the run blocking hasn't been as consistent to start the year. It's actually, now again, small sample size. It's his worst run blocking grades via Pro Football Focus of any of the 6 years in his career right now. I mean, we're talking about a guy who has two seasons of an 82-plus grade, including last year as a run blocker. He has a history of being a very good run blocker.
Right.
But it's also the fascinating part within the struggles of Brevin is it's his former position coach last year who got Brevin playing so well is now the offensive coordinator calling the plays. And there just seems to be a disconnect from the offensive staff because this is still a collective effort, I would say, more collective than at any point during the Kirk Ciarrocco or Mike Sanford tenures in terms of ideas thrown amongst the offensive staff of how they can attack an opposing defense. And so we're now through a quarter of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they still can't figure out how to get Brevin Spanford in situations that help the team, help Brevin Spanford play to his strengths. But that is, I don't have an answer for you. And that's the scary part of this conversation, Luke, is how Brevin just hasn't had great passes thrown to him as well. It also doesn't help that he's deflected two off of him for interceptions. That isn't good. That's not great. That can't continue to happen at all.
Yep.
But how do the I mean, I'm open to suggestions. I really don't like
the splitting them out all that much. And maybe it's a solution
like
search
clutch for everyone right now. I think people are leaning on that too much for my liking, because I see that a ton on social media and Gopher Illustrated. Stop flexing them out. Like I just told you, he's still in line 70% of the time the first three games of the season when looking at the Pro Football Focus data.
Yeah.
He's still in line a lot. It just isn't clicking for him right now, and that just can't continue to happen.
And the reality, too, is like he's done a really good job of garnering PIs, right? That has been good
against Eastern Michigan.
Yep.
But it just seems like the staff doesn't know how to correctly use him. Now, you could argue they don't know how to correctly use anyone in the passing game right now because the passing game's so broken. And I don't know that I would give you too much of a fight. But to me, that's the thing I want to see. That's the thing that I think is easiest to fix to me. You know, we talked about the three things we want to see Ethan improve on. But I think the easiest thing to kind of to help a young quarterback is to help him use his tight end, which is usually short to intermediate throws. He's got to have better ball placement with Brevin. And I think if Brevin continues to gain confidence, and if he can have a game against Northwestern or have a game against Louisiana prior to that Michigan game in early October. But that's the thing, Luke. I mean, it just has not been the start to the season that number 88 had hoped, that I think the Minnesota staff had hoped. And now you are where you are. And how do you get out of the mud? Because you're stuck and you're spinning your tires. And so they got to find a way to get themselves unstuck out of the mud with Brevin, because that's part of the issue with this passing game, Luke, is they just don't know how to kind of use Brevin correctly, in my mind.
Yeah, you're a quarter of the way through the season, right? PJ always talks about you have to find a way to respond. The reality is this whole offensive staff has to find a way to get more out of Brevin, Ethan, Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer.
Six targets on the day for Daniel Jackson and no catches. Now, again, he should have had at least one touchdown if that throws. He just cooked the corner. I cannot stress to you how wide open he was if that ball is going towards the center of the field where it's supposed to be. But that's the thing with this passing game, Luke. It's just Daniel Jackson can't have a game where it's six targets and no catches.
Yeah.
He just can't.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, Sean Tyler, I liked how they used him some in the past game. He hasn't been really a force running the ball. He was in the Eastern Michigan game, but I mean, we might find that everybody can run on Eastern Michigan as the season goes on.
How dare you?
We might find that out. They got to figure out how to get him.
How about Sean Tyler not getting a carry until the third quarter?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming he's in the doghouse.
Well, that's the thing. They deployed him out there. They just would use him in kind of passing sets, more or less. Which
tips your hand.
That's
the way
that Sean Tyler's usage is going to continue to be. Well, then you're going to start to develop some tendencies that you're going to have to break by continuing to give Sean Tyler the football.
Yep. Yeah.
Like with Darius Taylor's on the field, he's probably going to get the carry. Now, again, we can explore those in future episodes if those tendencies actually come to light. But it was interesting to see the way that they tried to deploy Sean in this game with a couple of catches is get him into space. What a novel concept.
Yeah, I thought that was good. Also, the Darius Taylor, I loved that play, you know, where they basically
first
ran
play
him
the
on,
game, play yep, action.
Absolutely.
25 yards because nobody's home.
Okay, then we need to wrap this up with at least the offensive discussion with a conversation about the red zone.
Yep.
Because it's been a struggle. And, you know, PJ
it's
said...
It's an identity crisis.
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't mean it to have it sound so harsh, but truly, I don't know that PJ Fleck or Greg Harbaugh or Matt Simon, name all the offensive coaches, I don't know that they know what they want to be. Like, you saw that first when Jack Henderson gets the interception, returns it to the North Carolina 16. Minnesota gets it 3rd and 1 at the North Carolina 7. They pick up a first down. It's 1st and 5 at the 5. And they go pass short right, incomplete. Darius Taylor up the middle, 0 yards. And then they try a Daniel Jackson fade, but the ball isn't placed correctly. Should be more towards the back pylon. Plus the North Carolina corner, I'll give him credit, made a good play on the ball. But you can't have it 1st and 5, Luke, and not gain a single yard before you kick a field goal. It's just, I don't think that they trust Darius to, or that they believe Darius knows how to find the end zone, I'll say. Because you watch his running style. It's, I mean, I personally, to myself, and I've tweeted this, I think he's just a bowling baller, a bowling ball type of 6 foot running back out there. But that's the thing. He's 6 foot. He's still learning how to play behind his pads, how to play lower, always fall forward the way Muhammad Ibrahim did for so many years and why he was so proficient in the red zone. But they just, they don't know what they want to be. And that's the issue, is now you're now a quarter of the way through the season. You've had, I believe, now 10 trips to the red zone in 3 games, and you only have 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Want to know what the crux of the scoring offensive issues is? 4 touchdowns on 10 red zone possessions is just not going to get it done in Big Ten play.
Well, let's talk about that identity crisis, too. We went from 44 pass attempts to 55 rushing attempts. This was a little bit more balanced this week, right? I think this is what we kind of expected we would see in this season. I'm now a little bit concerned, Ryan, that we go into Northwestern and we revert back to 55 rushing attempts. And I think that right now is the last thing. And that's based on what we know about PJ Fleck, right? He's basically going to do whatever he thinks is going to ensure they win, right? But this is... You gotta start continuing to rep the passes, and trying to manufacture explosive plays, because if you can't, you've got no shot against Michigan and you've got no shot against Ohio State, and not saying they maybe do anyway, but you know, you're going to need this against the Iowas and the Wisconsins and the Illinois and the Purdues, etc.
I'm going to take this opportunity to put this disclaimer out there. If you are this far into the episode, and if there is one thing Luke and I want you to take from this entire episode of your time, your energy, and your listening, it is this. If you are frustrated that Minnesota cannot generate explosive plays, specifically explosive passing plays, well, then you better hope and pray that PJ Fleck does not retreat into a shell the next 2 weeks, because you want to know how you get better at generating explosive passing plays. You keep effing trying them. You can't get... It's clear that now in year 7 of the Fleck era, this isn't a light switch that Minnesota can turn on and turn off. And I'm hoping that the head coach has now seen that after game 2, where game 1 they threw it 44 times, game 2 it was RTB, run the ball. They ran it. Great. Minnesota can run the football for the 7th straight year. That's important in the Big Ten. It's played a part, a big part, I would say, in why they've been so successful in the win-loss column, specifically in the last 3 full seasons. But if you want Minnesota to ever take that next step, think back to 2019, the last time that Minnesota had an explosive passing game. It helps when you have 2 first-team All-Big Ten receivers in Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson, but you know what Minnesota did every single effing game? They kept going back to it. They kept trying it. And so that's where next week against Northwestern, Minnesota could run Darius Taylor 35 times for 220 yards and win the game 24-10. Great, you won the football game, but what did you truly accomplish for when the games get a lot tougher in October, November, when you face Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan, that first weekend of October? So if I have one thing I am going to plead this week, both on Gopher Illustrated and on Twitter, I'll ask Fleck about it, Harbaugh about it. It's the light switch theory that Minnesota at times just thinks you can flip on the light switch and you're going to be good at throwing the ball 50 yards down the field and connecting on these at a high efficiency clip. Clearly, Minnesota's not. Clearly, they're not efficient enough. Clearly, they need to continue to work on
it. They just need reps, man. They need reps.
Well, that's the thing. They work on it in practice, and they hit these in practice because I've seen them hit them in practice at a high clip.
Yeah, but those aren't live bullet reps.
That's what my point is. The Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday reps are not translating to Saturday. You know what does translate to Saturday? Trying them on Saturday and continuing to try them on Saturday and continuing to try them on Saturday.
And I'm
because that's the crux of it.
Yeah, I'm just sick.
You need to continue to go back to it. And that's what I hope against Northwestern this upcoming weekend. That's what I hope against Louisiana in 2 weeks, is that Minnesota doesn't go away from it because they had a bad experience in North Carolina. Because if you, the Gopher fan, want to see them hit on some of these, you're going to have to see them practice more in live game reps, and you need reps, you need reps, you need reps.
Yeah, and I'm sick of the theory, Ryan, that you don't want to put stuff on tape. Who cares? Like, absolutely, you need...
No one should care at this point. No. Everyone has tape on everyone because you're three games into the
exactly.
season. You know what every team is going to be. Like, you can keep dialing up the same shot if it's still open. If Lemeke Brockington continues to break open on that route every single game, then keep trying to throw it to him.
Well, the other thing is
single game.
The other thing is, like, put formations out there and build tendencies and then break them the next game. You know, like, I mean, it's not that hard. Like, self-scout yourself or build a plan. I hate the, like, well, we don't want to get it on tape. We want to save it for the right time. It's like, no,
stop.
Just work it. Yeah.
I agree with you. And that's what I mean, is stop with that line of thinking. It's year seven. This offense is going to be predicated around the quarterback, whether you like it or not. And if he's going to have the worst game of his career, which I think he self-admitted to after the game, you're just never going to win a football game. But if you still believe that there's a ceiling there like I do, you still believe there's talent there like I do, you have to continue to give him shots on Saturdays to make those plays, to have him build confidence in himself, because there is no other option besides Ethan Calliope-Manis. It ain't going to be Cole Kramer. I'm very skeptical it's going to be Drew Vioto, at least in the short term. And that's where you're going to ride or die with Ethan Calliope-Manis. And you better keep continuing to give him reps to make those plays down the field. You know he's got the physical attributes and the strength to do it. He's just got to find the accuracy in it, being able to do it, Luke.
And lastly, it's like, show him that you have the vote of confidence in him, right? Like, to do that, don't play mind games with your quarterback and say, you know what, struggled last week, but you know what, we can just win this running the ball. Like, then that's where the self-doubt's going to creep in. Like,
I hope and pray, and we'll talk about it a lot in the preview episode, that Fleck doesn't do it. Don't pull an Eastern Michigan next week because you can. Minnesota's a 2-touchdown favorite, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit, against Northwestern. They stink. The Wildcats stink. I don't mean to be disrespectful to that program. They're just not very good. Minnesota can go in there, like I said, run the ball 50 times for 250 yards and win the game 24-10. But what does that accomplish? What does that accomplish for this season?
It gets you the W, but that's very short-sighted.
It doesn't help your offense.
No.
Like, Joe Rossi's defense against Northwestern, I would be absolutely bewildered, gobsmacked, use your GGR drinking word here, that they give up more than 10 or 13 points to that Northwestern offense. I would be absolutely shocked. So if you're going to have ample opportunities to get the ball back from Joe Rossi's defense, you better do something with it and continue to try things on offense, Luke.
It's time once again to find a way to save money on your home, your auto, maybe your commercial business, maybe some sort of real estate. How are people going to save that money, and who are they going to contact?
They're going to contact the Burns Insurance Agency in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota, your favorite independent insurance agent. Now, I want to tell a very quick story here. I ran into one of my father's clients here in the last week, and he reminded me of a story of Bill Burns, the insurance agency. They had a car actually drive through the front of their business on Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. By 5:30, my father had already contacted builders to be able to come out and rebuild give them at least a makeshift front for the night. It was in the winter as well. There were propane tanks coming down from northern Minnesota, being able to generate everything. And the thing he stressed to me the most is this happened at Friday at 5 p.m. They were open for business Saturday morning because of all the energy and effort their independent insurance agent had put into them. So if you want to have that type of service in your life from your insurance agent that puts you at the forefront, first and foremost, check them out online at insurancebyburns.com or email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group, Ryan, sponsors Gopher Gridiron Radio. They are one team with one dream. Their goal is to help you find your first home, maybe your second home, maybe sell your first home. And most importantly, they are going to be supporting Gopher Athletics by supporting Dinkytown athletes and the athletes that are a part of that collective. So if you were thinking about buying a new house, reach out to Team Dinkytown. Why? Because a portion of the commission will be going to Dinkytown athletes. You may not have a ton of cash that you can just pour into Dinkytown athletes in the form of a membership and donation, but you know what? You might be buying a house. You might be selling a house. This is a great way for you to use some of that commission that would go to the real estate agent that will go absolutely to Dinkytown athletes and support Gopher sports in all the sports, not just football, but basketball, volleyball, etc. Soccer, doesn't matter. You can elect that as you see fit. So go to teamdinkytown.com. You can also reach out to them via the classic telephone, if that's more your style, 612-250-8562. All right, let's talk a little bit about some games around the Big Ten West. We're already long, so we'll skip over the Big Ten East. I'll just give scores from that. Maryland 42, Virginia 14, Michigan 31, Bowling Green 6. Surprisingly, that was closer than I expected. Ohio State kind of seemed to get back on track, 63-10 over Western Kentucky. Now let's jump. Oh, and then we should mention, Ryan, Washington 41, Michigan State 7. Love to see
it. Put some respect on your team, the Washington Huskies.
Thank you. Right.
Somebody put some respect on them. All right.
I mean, just an absolute blitz in the first half. Love to see it. 35 points and just a nice cruise in the second half. Did I tell you that my uncle went to the game there? And then he also, as a Seahawks fan as well, went down to Detroit and watched that. So a good weekend for him. And then we'll wrap up with Indiana, Louisville. Louisville takes the cake, 21-14. And then we should mention, I think it would be a disservice to not talk about this game just a tiny bit, Ryan. Rutgers moves to 3-0 now, 35-16 over Virginia Tech. And I think they've kind of found the path maybe to bowl eligibility. I mean, it's still no guarantee being they play in the East. But man, you know, Minnesota East is really finding a way, and you really hope for the sake of that program that they can find a way to be bowl eligible.
It gives me Chris Streveler versus San Jose State vibes in terms of Gavin Wimsett, the Rutgers quarterback, threw for 46 yards. Rutgers had 46 yards of passing, and they scored 35 points.
Yes. Like, it was amazing.
Golly. God bless Joe Harris Simiak's defense, giving Kirk Shiraka's offense opportunities, but they certainly got that thing humming on the ground.
All right, so Penn State took care of Illinois 30-13. This game was probably closer than the score indicated, Ryan. But ultimately, Illinois moves to 1-2 on the season, 0-1 in the Big Ten. And frankly, Penn State's just really good.
Trey Potts threw a touchdown on this
game. Yeah, I did see that. That's ridiculous.
Trey Potts has as many passing touchdowns as the University of Minnesota does in general. How about that stat through the first quarter of the year? Yikes.
It's wild.
But, and in this game, turnovers told the story. Illinois, 5 turnovers. Luke Altmyer, 4 picks. 4 picks. Yikes. 5 turnovers on the day. Penn State doesn't turn it over once. Everything else was very, very even. But when you give Penn State that many opportunities, they're too good of a football team to not put 30 on you.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in Champaign.
You know, as someone not emotionally invested in this game, I know the turnovers were a problem, but it still felt closer than that, even with all those turnovers. Duke gets the win over Northwestern. I know, Ryan, you did everything you could to stay for the entire for this entire game, but you
Two Big Ten teams being like 20 minutes apart.
Yeah, 8 miles.
In North Carolina on the same weekend with Duke and Durham and North Carolina and Chapel Hill, as someone who just spent an entire weekend in Raleigh, very, very close to one another. But how about that? I mean, that was the most random thing from this college football weekend. Why are there two Big Ten teams within 20 minutes of each other in a random state like North Carolina?
Yeah, absolutely. Northwestern again moves to 1-2 on the season. I don't think anybody really gave them a chance here, and Duke was able to prevail. Again, we'll preview Northwestern in general. This is obviously a struggling football team and likely will struggle all season. This is the one I did want to spend a little bit of time on. Iowa 41-10, Ryan. So Iowa actually gets down 7-0. Then they have a delay, right? They move into halftime 14-10 against Western Michigan, right? This is not a great football team. The ending score is kind of what you expect, but it felt a little bit like a battle for Iowa in general. And then instead of taking a knee, they had to run the score up because Brian Ferentz was running low on points early in the season, and he needed to run that average up just a bit.
The other part from this game, I would say, is a disastrous first quarter for Greek's Iowa Hawkeyes. 7-0 and then a lightning delay, which I think it was about the 1 year anniversary of when they had their lightning delay against Nevada, I believe last year. But the thing I'm also watching from this game is their best tight end, Luke Lachey, went down in a crumpled heap. And I know he was in a boot on the sidelines. I think we're still waiting on an injury update, but if he's out a significant amount of time,
yeah, it's a bowl.
This is a passing game for Iowa that on the day was 11 of 22. For 133 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Cade McNamara specifically was below 500 with his completion percentage with 2 picks and 2 touchdowns. So if you thought it was a poor passing game, I mean, we just talked about Luke Altmaier from Illinois throwing 4 picks. Cade McNamara is completing under 50% of his passes with 2 picks. It was not a banner day for West quarterbacks throughout.
No, absolutely not. Wisconsin wins 35-14, but Ryan,
this game was nuts.
Yes,
it was nuts.
Yes,
I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, 7-7 at halftime with Georgia Southern, and
Georgia Southern should have been up, if not 17 points at halftime.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that if you're a Wisconsin fan, you know, change, especially pretty drastic change, can be hard. And I think, you know, they were able to get the win, but this is the kind of game that epitomizes, you know, the frustration that can exist when you make a big transition like an identity that Wisconsin is going through now.
Why I say that Georgia Southern should have been up 10, if not 17 points. Georgia Southern turned the ball over 6 times in this game. 6. The quarterback threw 5 picks, and I believe at least 5 of these 6 turnovers were in Wisconsin territory. Like, I'd never seen anything like that before, where they move the ball so consistently well and they shoot themselves in the foot, or Wisconsin makes a play. Like, it was something, Luke. Six turnovers, and I think 5 of them were in Wisconsin territory. You can't make that stuff up, and that's where you're never going to beat Wisconsin if you turn the ball over 6 times. I don't care who you are. But that's where, to your point, Georgia Southern had no issue moving the ball until they would shoot themselves in the foot. And that's where Georgia Southern, I think, almost had 300 yards of passing at halftime. It's a different recipe that I'm not used to when I'm watching Wisconsin Badger football.
All right. Nebraska finally gets a win. They moved 1-2 on the season. They win 35-11 over Northern Illinois. good for them. I'm turns happy.
When you don't turn the ball over every single quarter, you can actually win a football game.
Yeah, novel I mean
concept when, and that's the note here is Jeff Sims does not play in this game because he's banged up, and I think it's Heinrich Harburg, something like that. He essentially takes the Chris Streveler approach, which I didn't realize Chris Streveler was going to get this much run on a Gopher podcast.
Is he still with an NFL team right now? Is he still with the Jets?
I think the Jets let him go.
Okay.
But their quarterback for Nebraska, I mean, 158 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he ran 21 times for nearly 100 yards and a touchdown. They're able to get the ground game going.
Yeah, Anthony
able
to Grant looked
defensively
good.
That when they're not put on short fields, they're actually a pretty competent defense, if not a good defense.
Yeah.
And they were creating havoc around the around Northern Illinois all day. Now, I'm not here to tell you Northern Illinois is a particularly good football team. It's not like Jerry Kill in the early 2010s is coaching that team, but good for Nebraska finally being able to have Matt Rhule get his first victory.
Yeah, and then Syracuse wins 35-20 over Purdue. Purdue moves to 1-2 on the season. They now have 2 home losses on the season, and Purdue moves to 3-0. You know, I
go Orange, baby.
Yeah, I know you were excited about this one. You're kind of like a closet Syracuse fan, so that's fun.
Which I know, incredibly random of all the teams in across America.
Yeah.
Syracuse Orange being, I guess my closet team there.
Yeah. Hudson Card, 323 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. In general, I think Purdue is probably going to struggle a little bit. I thought their defense would be better with Ryan Walters, but in the end, you know, they gave up 35 points. They just haven't found a way to, I guess, to get into a shootout with anybody quite yet.
Well, it doesn't help when you commit 11 penalties for 127 yards, plus turn the ball over 4 times with 3 lost fumbles and a pick. You're just not going to win many football games that way. Now, I'm not here to tell you that Syracuse was much more disciplined. They also had over 100 penalty yards in the day, but they just couldn't stop Garrett Schrader, the Syracuse quarterback, on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. 195 yards.
He ran for 195 yards and 4 scores. Hudson Card, I mean, he looked pretty good at times, I would say. But it's just it reminds me of the Illinois defense, or that game did, I should say, specifically for Purdue, where the Illinois defense is very mouthy, very undisciplined. And then you look at Purdue, the former Illinois defensive coordinator now running that team, 11 penalties, 4 turnovers. It's just self-inflicted wounds, the story of the Big Ten West in week 3.
All right, I want to thank everybody for listening. I know this was a lengthy episode. I appreciate you sticking with us. If you did, please do support our sponsors, Home Field Apparel, Comply, Foam, Team Dinky Town Real Estate Group, and the Burns Insurance Agency. Again, we'll look forward to previewing the game against Northwestern, that late night affair that Ryan has been so eager to get moved to the evening. Should be fun. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.